This program was first broadcast on Planet FM, Community Access Media in Tāmaki Makaurau, Auckland. You're hearing it on accessmedia.nz thanks to Erirangi Te Motu.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Weekend here on Planet FM. If you're listening in the Auckland region on 104.6 FM or across New Zealand and the world on planetaudio.org.nz, I hope you're all having a good day. And of course, our thoughts go out to the people. Obviously, last night, the rain, I've never seen it. And, you know, Auckland, we got our little bit, but those poor people in Tasman, mate. You know, my heart goes out to you. I hope you're all good down there. Anyway, just before we get to our first guest, a big shout out to Father Ted's Original Irish Pub. They're based at 1 Wellesley Street West in the Auckland CBD. They have a selection of local craft and international draft beers on tap, a selection of bottled beers, fine wines, good spirits, great food, and music Wednesday through to Saturday night. So, make Father Ted's your location to go to. Their number is 09377 3142, or you can email them fatherteds@hotmail.com. Well, we get ready. Well, last week, a close one for the All Blacks, and it's been an interesting week of rugby. Here to join us, as he always joins us, former All Black, part of the 1987 World Cup winning team, AJ Whitten. Good morning to you. How are you, sir?
Yeah, well, it's a better morning. We're dry, and boy, did it pour down last night. I mean, getting tired of the weather, that's for sure. But hey, you mentioned those people down in the Marlborough Tasman district. Yeah, hearts go out to them, man. They've copped it twice. So let's stop our moaning. We're really haven't had the deluge that they have.
Yep, no moaning here, because believe me, you know, I look at it. Jesus, it was so dangerous for some of those people, and there'll be a number of homes that will be, you know, obviously won't be able to live.
Houses, I mean, yeah, so let's hope they get some sunshine, and the test match tonight brightens up their dreary.
We hope so. Well, the All Blacks have made two changes, one and four, a couple enforced changes. Scott Barrett, he's out for the series. Artie Sevier takes over as captain. Originally picked was Caleb Clark. He's out for the series, so Ronnie Narawa comes into it. But then we have the French. Well, as I said to you off here, they're just so unpredictable, and they've made 10 changes.
Yeah, that's Fabian Gaultier for you. A lookalike JK glasses. I don't know who's setting the trend, but that's the French for you. Just off here, we were talking about their inconsistencies in selection, but that's just the way they roll. I said earlier, a week ago before they started the series, Biggie, it's really an introduction tour for them. They're blooding for the future. And you know what? They don't mind losing a series. You know, they always look at the bigger picture. They've got their autumn series coming up in the Six Nations and a World Cup a year or two away. So, next year, a year or two away. So, look, they're just looking at the future, and that's what they do. And so, hence, what, 8-10 changes, captain, what, number two, the hooker, Barlow, don't know anything about him, really. I think there's only, you know, what, one or two people from the starting 15. So, wow. just watch the space, because you just don't know what to expect.
It's the unknown, as we said last week. We looked at this French team, and okay, you can go back to the TMO and his decisions, but in reality, this French side really possibly, their defence, I have to say, AJ, their defence was just so good.
Yeah, I think that's when you put a team together of the unknowns. They haven't got much to lose, and same old story for the All Blacks down in Dunedin, starting your first test. The team comes together mentally. You're thinking, is this their top French side? I mean, I've been there before. No matter how much you build yourself up, you are probably a bit more complacent. But yeah, and they paid the price. Some basic mistakes, the turnover, just not physical enough at the turnover. And I think the French team just got more confident as the game went on. So just get back to the basics. I see Scott Robinson's only made a couple of changes. So he's gone the consistent approach. He wants these guys to say, look, you've had one run. We expect better, or should I say, we demand better. And I'm thinking the All Blacks should run away with this test match for sure.
I think they will. Obviously, another debut for Timothy Tavatavanaiwe. And, you know, we've been singing his praises all season during Super Rugby. So a great honour for that young man. I just look at this. I think the All Blacks have got a point to prove. And there will be, you know, I think if there's not a convincing win, I think there will still be some questions asked. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. They know themselves. They won't have to be sit down like, in a classroom and said, right, this is where you went wrong. You analyse your own game before someone or the head coaches or your video analysis tell you. You know you didn't play to your potential. It's as simple as that. A makeshift side from France and a first test up and you win by, what, 3 points? So, or 4 points. So they'll know. A bit of hard work, a bit of graft and training, and just go out there and say, hey, guys, we've just got to put a better performance together. We're better than this. We've got some major or some senior experienced players there. And just play to your potential, and you should be far too good for this French side. And if you're not in that mental space, then you're going to have another bloody hard day at the office.
Absolutely. So also, just a curtain raiser before the All Blacks, the Black Ferns versus the Wallaroos, and obviously Ruby Tuvey have been called into the squad. Black Ferns just look too good on paper for Australia, and I can't see anything but a 30-40 point win for them there, AJ.
Yeah, I wouldn't know what the score. They've been pretty consistent over the last 4, 5, 6, putting up a big score. So, and they're playing for test spots or for touring spots for the World Cup. So, yeah, game for them. First of all, do your basics. Let the score take care of itself. And if these girls go and play as they should do, you'll see most of them on the plane later in the year.
Absolutely. Then, of course, later on this afternoon, Fiji versus Scotland. Scotland were very impressive against the New Zealand Maoris. And Fiji, very much a heartbreaking loss to the Wallabies in Newcastle, 21-18.
Yeah, what a match. They got out of jail. We talked earlier that you don't read too much
into it. Yeah, you can't. You can't read much into it.
But the momentum for Australia, especially with the British Lions, I would have expected a better result for them. And again, you know, if you take the Fijians lightly, you pay the price, and they nearly did. So, yep, they got out of jail. If they play like that, they're going to get done. No way against the British Lions. They'll get done. So they've just really got to pick themselves up. But I see the Scots have only made, only 14 changes? So how seriously are they taking this? I'm not sure, but only the second row is back in. So, big turnaround for them going over there. Hopefully they haven't been on the Guinness because they'll get a rude awakening. But, yeah, he's throwing all the reserves in to give them a run. Hopefully it doesn't backfire. Fiji at home, we know, seem to go another arm and leg.
Yeah, I think you couldn't go past Fiji with the amount of changes there. If Scotland had more or less kept the same side they had against the Maoris, you'd probably favourite Scotland. Japan versus Wales. Well, I have to say, Wales I think this Wales will finally get, I'm saying this right now, for all my Welsh friends out there, all my boyos, Wales will get, I think Wales might get this one on.
Well, I picked Japan to win at home, and they did. Have they got two in a row? Well, we'll see with coach old Eddie Jones. I see they've got a very settled side. I mean, Leach has just been inspirational, the number six there, and Cornelison, the other, Lucy. I see they've got Dearns. They've got a very settled forward pack, so I think that's where they may dominate, but just enough ball for Wales. Redemption for them. They really or desperately need a win, don't they? Just for confidence, and here they are trying to get themselves together for a Six Nations coming up. And look, a close one to call. I'd like to see Wales win too, but you know what? I'll stick with Japan. Yeah, playing at home. Good to see they've got enough two in a row.
Anyway, the Lions versus an Anzac 15 made up of players from Australia and New Zealand. I have to say, I'm really looking forward to this game because I think we said that Andy Farrell will probably put out his best lineup, but he's still deciding what it is. They obviously had a bit of a tough one against the Brumbies, but I have to say they're going to have to make some tough decisions soon, aren't they?
Well, I think, Murray, we know that the skipper, Murray Oche, will be there. He's been rested, of course. I see old Targ Furlong's the second row for Ireland. He's taking over the captaincy. You've got a big touring party, so you've got to give everyone a run. I mean, it's the Anzac, it's a very nice team, the Australian New Zealand Invitational. Just come together. Not a lot of preparation. I see a few backs in there for us, and Fakatava, Haveli. Oh, Lamapi's there, and you got Lamb and Scotty Stevenson. You got some very talented people.
No. Sean Stevenson. Scotty Stevenson works on the other radio channel for your mate, part time Kyle.
Yeah, that's right, and they are part-timers, eh? But,
thanks.
But the Tutu's there, Frizzell. I mean, they've got some talent, but how cohesive is it? I'm not sure. You're playing a British Isles Lions tide in Ireland, and they've been together on tour, so they've got a bit of a combination going. So I think they'll win and win quite comfortably. And I'm just looking to see how the Kiwi boys go wearing that yellow and gold and a wee bit of black jersey. This looks a bit surreal.
And, of course, then we move on to some of the other matches. South Africa versus Italy. Italy gave them a bit of a hurry up, which I don't think they were too wrapped about. And, of course, Argentina versus England. Now, we tend to, maybe with Southern Hemisphere rugby, and I include Argentina in this, is that we tend to think that, oh, this should be easy. But England really gave Argentina a hiding, and they've got a good team. I think the Argies will win this, but it does show the depth within some of the Northern Hemisphere teams now.
Yeah, I think we've just more or less got to look after our own patch and stop worrying about what's happening overseas. I mean, they've got their own boats to row. We've got plenty happening in our backyard, so just make sure we get our national team on the right track, playing that exciting, vibrant and running rugby that we like to see. England, only one change. Why not? They bet the Argies first test up, but I'm anticipating a lot meaner and more physical Argentinian side. They've made seven changes, so the people have paid the price, and let's just see how they come up. It would be disappointing if the Argies don't win a test at home against the English, that's for sure, but that would be unexpected.
I'm saying this right now, and I heard my old mate Mark Watson, he actually said it. He feels that we could drop one in Argentina this year in the Rugby Championship for the All Blacks, and I think, that'll be a tough one. It's a pity we didn't have a travel agent and sponsors, because we could have led a tour together.
the tall and the short of it, eh? That would be a lot of fun. You could be, I tell you what, you'd make a great mascot. I'd have you there at the front of the bus on the windscreen.
You have me at the front of the bar by the drinks.
Well, I would have to have a stepladder to make sure you put the money over the bar. But anyway, that's a great one. Put it out there, and if you want to go and I want to go and we've got some punters, let's do it. Yeah, love to go.
I reckon if there is a travel agent there, obviously AJ's the big name, so I'll do the day and AJ does the night. on that part of the tour. So yeah, so and we may have to get ring someone in to be a part time host. So well, if we can secure the sponsorship, but maybe that's for another day. Anyway, AJ, what are you up to for the rest of the day? Are you going down and watch Grandma take on Varsity?
A great mate of mine, Grant Dixon, he's a Varsity man. We were going to endeavour to go down, but it depends on the weather. It is forecast for a bit of rain somewhere.
It is Auckland, AJ. Spoiler alert there, mate.
Haven't gone too good, and off two or three in a row against Varsity, so that'll be a tight one. And you guys, Eden, you're playing today too. Just missed out on that top six. Sorry to bring it up.
Yeah, that's okay, AJ. We still murdered your lot by 2 points, so just remember that. And just remember, on this one, I have the higher ground because I'm in control of all the buttons here.
Well, at least you're in control of something because you need to sort your life out. But anyway,
thanks a lot, AJ. That's good. Hey, mate, you have a fantastic weekend.
You look after yourself. Dos cerveza por favor, señor. That means two beers, please. I've always remembered that.
Take care, mate. Bye.
Bye.
AJ Whitten, fantastic, isn't he? He's a always has to get one. Okay, next up, we're going to do our regional rugby wrap. Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender here on Planet FM. And that was a bit of Don't Forget Your Roots, that's our song as we lead into the Regional Rugby Act. 660, I hope you're listening, Bill, my mate out in, my old mate out there, and I hope Wales wins. But anyway, we get into it and we talk to, before we go any further, God, I'm halfway ferries, too much coffee. This is brought to you by Force Electrical. At Force Electrical, they are a team of experienced professionals dedicated to providing high quality electrical services for both their residential and commercial clients. With over 10 years of experience, they pride themselves in being reliable and thorough, taking great care and ensuring that their clients' needs are met in a timely and efficient manner. So, give Force Electrical a call. Their number is 021-628-341. Or you can contact Nick at forceelectrical.co.nz. And joining us, as he always does, Stephen Harris. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, sir. Great to be here. Always a privilege and a pleasure. Never a chore.
Oh, it's always great to have you part of the show, Stephen. And I tell you what, we've got a couple of finals, we've got a couple of playoffs games, and across rugby, we've got three finals to speak about. But we're going to start off in your part of the world, Northland Whangarei, and it's Mid Northern versus Western Sharks in the final, and they have been probably the two teams to watch in the Whangarei competition.
Yeah, very much so. Of course, Western Sharks playing in their second final in a row in this year's Whangarei Men's Senior competition. Last year they were beaten finalists against Carmo. They'll be hoping to go to go one better, but their courtesy of a very good win over Ngāti Hemi Moerua United Kaukaua last week, who I actually picked to win, so somewhat maybe of an upset, but they were playing at home. And Mid-Northern at the end, although they found the first 60 minutes tough going against the very plucky Old Boys Marist side, pulled away in the end to win 32-13, so hence both these two teams are in the final today. That'll be preceded by both these teams with their respective reserve grades in the final, Mid-Northern versus Clayton Valley Sharks, who are pretty much the reserve team for Western Sharks. Mid-Northern are going to be fielding up to 11 players who have been selected for the Northland NPC Taniwhas this year. So,
wow.
I know, crazy, where Western Sharks, the two Northland players, Jordan Hutchings and Matt Matic, boy, going to be a tough ask for Western Sharks. Been a lot of rain around up in the far north, as in the 09. But you know what? I don't think Mid-Northern will miss this opportunity to take the win. They're still hurting about getting knocked out in the semi-final last year. I'm picking Mid-Northern to pick up another title. They're pretty much the Ponsonby, but of Northland rugby.
Absolutely. And then we move down to North Harbour. Now, we start off, we have the plate final between Silverdale and Helensville. I'm actually thinking that Helensville will win this one.
Yeah, I think so. They've had a really, really good year. However, this game is being played up in Silverdale, so I think I'll probably just go for the home side, simply because it is up in Silverdale.
Okay, then we move on to the North Harbour semi-finals, and it's North Shore versus East Coast Base. East Coast Base caused a major upset beating Takapuna last week. So this game, you'd have to favour Shore, but, you know, this competition has pulled out a few surprises already.
Oh, it has. Even, you know, you kind of look through some of these teams, and I've got to be honest with you. You know, East Coast Bays are pretty much a real unknown quantity. I had a quick look through some of their team list or some of their name players, and if I'm totally honest with you, there's not a lot of name players that their names actually, you know, throw out. They play NPC, or, you know, they've got that sort of pedigree. I do see Jed Melvin, who's a North Harbour flanker, is on the bench. He's been in the USA playing MLR. But obviously, whatever they're doing, they've got a good 9-10 combination of Donnelly and Della Cruz. Tony Donnelly, an ex-Northland age group player. So they've been doing really well. But they're up against a North Shore side with, you know, Yuri Marfilio in the front row. They've also got Oscar Collar in the back line, who's played North Harbour and a few other names there that have been around the North Shore club for a while. Brad McNaughton, the half, and Cam Howell, who I'll expect to see in the North Harbour side this year, Hunter Rice. Mate, I think because, of, once again, homegrown advantage at Vauxhall Sports Field, although their crowd will be very heavy, as we know it too well, I think in this case you go for the home side.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there. Massey versus Takapuna at Moya Park in Massey. You know what? I'm actually backing the boys at the end of the Norwestern Motorway to win this one.
Yeah, I think I'll go along with the wheels have kind of fallen off with this. They're not totally fallen off, because they're obviously still there in a final. But man, you know, Takapuna, you look through their side. Their locks, they've got Tristan Cook, Jack Lee, who both played for Blues Development. Sam Molley is once again a very good footballer. And, you know, they've got the likes of Sofa Marker out on the wing there, Manu Pia, who's played for Samoa, North Harbour.
And Eden.
And Eden as well. And they've got the very dangerous kicker, Willinger, at centre. So, man, that's a heck of a side. But I think I agree with you. I think Messi play with so much passion out in the area. I will go with Messi.
Okay, so that's that part done. So the next minute we move on to the Auckland Women's Coleman Shield Final. Whoa, this is a big one out of Western Springs. Ponsonby versus Maris. Now, you know, probably the two best teams in the competition meet in a final. And I have suspicions that it might be that we might be talking Ponsonby Maris in a couple of weeks' time, but that's for another time. This one, you'd have to call it ponies.
Yeah, I think so. They're skippered by Eloise Blackwell, and boy, she's got a ton of experience. Former Black Fern, been around Eldora Aitunu as well, for another former Black Fern. There weren't a lot of names that really stood out for me. Summer Capson, beg your pardon, is captaining the side from number 8 for Marist. But once again, I think I've got to go with home ground advantage. That's on me.
Absolutely. So then we move on and we start off with the Patola semi-finals. We're going to do the Gallagher Shield qualifiers last when it comes to Auckland out of these. So we start off Suburbs versus Your Mob, Waitemata. I really hope that Your Mob win. Nothing against my mates the Suburbs, because I want to catch up for a coffee with you who will ever win the next game. But just from your perspectives, how do you see that going?
Oh, boy, not a lot of love lost between these two sides. I know Waitemata would be fired up. Man, this might be worth going for a look. It's, you know, the weather is not too bad in the 09 today after the last 48 hours. But I think if I had to tip somewhere, I would go Suburbs, but I'm hoping like Waitemata can get themselves up.
Anyway, we move on to my team, Eden. Now, just before anyone goes any further, there was a lot of drama last week. It was a 24-all draw. Sadly, we had a disallowed try in the last minute, which may have changed our fortunes. But the way the competition works was we were tied on points with University. Now, the rules state if it's a drawn game, it's a team that scores first. I think it's a silly rule because I've got my own personal interests involved, but the rules are the rules. It would have been ratified through all your senior delegates. We just have to wear our big boy pants and beat Papatoa. I think these guys, you've come so close, but you've still got a trophy to play for, Eden. And I think Eden will win.
Yeah, listen, I've got to say, though, in all honesty, you know, having only lost three games this season, Eden are incredibly unlucky. You know, if you look at least four of the teams ahead of them, they all lost four games. In fact, even if you look at Marist lost three games during the season, but I suppose just bonus points just proved to be real crucial at the end of the day for Eden. But listen, I got to say, what a plucky performance from your club. I saw them day one against Waitemata and I thought it would be a long season, but so goddamn unlucky, I've got to say. But they will be too strong for Papatoetoe at Grimblehurst Park this afternoon.
Anyway, we move on to Gallagher Shield playoffs qualifiers. We have Pakuranga versus College Rifle. Should be an interesting game. I'm actually picking Pakuranga to win this one.
Yeah, I would go along with them. They're actually quite a plucky and difficult side to play. Some of these sides will be affected by, I know a lot of the NPC squads got together earlier in the week, so we might see a slight shift, you know, from some of those key players in respective sides, but I think Pakuranga to do the job.
G-Tech versus University.
Yeah. Quite an interesting one. Once again, there'll be a little bit of effect for both of these sides losing some of their players. I know that this game could be actually shifted because ground conditions out at Orake Domain weren't the greatest yesterday. It could be moved from the number one ground to the number two ground, but as you know, you get a lot of water off the hills out of that ground. Those conditions, I would imagine, probably are going to be, terms of horse racing, terms are probably going to be a little on the puggy side, but maybe you've got to go for the home side.
Absolutely. And finally, Karaka versus Pukekohe in the County's Manukau final.
Wow, couple of turn-ups there last week, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Who actually saw this coming? You know, I thought it was written in the script at the start of the season that we're probably going to see Karaka and Patamahoe running around in this, but you know, both sides have had a couple of hiccups in the last couple of weeks. Listen, I went through both of these sides, and you know, they've both all got a sprinkling of counties, Monaco players, the Pukekohe premiers, Whitehead prop Kieran Van Standen has played, Tirama Rubin, the six, has also played for a bit of games for counties Monaco, but I do like their left wing, Jeremy Drewy, the Fijian, very good on his feet, although I would say it would probably be soft underfoot at Navigation Home Stadium today. Kanaka also got a lot of counties Monaco players. Let's see, ex-university boy Cam Church on the side of the scrum for Karaka this afternoon, but they've got a very good halves combination of Hill and Penny who will drive the side around. Their strength really, once again, out wide, Sione Molia and Penta, the New Zealand Sevens player, and it's not too bad when you've got Mali out on the wing. Boy, I tell you what, this is going to come down to who can dominate this game up front. Mate, I'm going to go for a turn-up. I'm going to go for Pukekohe.
You know what? I think you could be right. I can just see it being a Pukekohe. I can see it actually being a Pukekohe one. Yeah.
I think we will get a turn up, and just got to say, listen, all the very best to those teams playing in finals today or semi-finals.
Yeah. Thanks, Stephen, and I think you're dead right. And to the people out there, no matter what division your club's in, go out and support them.
Absolutely. You know, don't forget, we've still got under-21s rugby around. Of course, no secondary school rugby with the school holidays on at the moment, but there's plenty of stuff that you can get out and watch. Let's tell you what, it's like a plethora. A plethora of rugby that's happening at the moment. So get out there and let's all the sun's out.
Stephen, are you obviously getting ready for the commentary for the NPC season? So you're getting all these flash words out. I am going to chat to you during the week, and I may need you for something, but I'll talk to you during the week, young man.
No, not a problem at all. Have a great show, what you've got left, and I'll tell you what, it's award-winning stuff, brother.
Absolutely. Text me your bank account details. Good man.
Yes,
thanks, mate. Bye. Stephen Harris, absolutely wonderful. I always enjoy, and you know what, this has been, since we moved to 2 hours a few years ago, that has been a staple diet, has been the regional club rugby wrap. Anyway, next up we talk a bit of NRL and Auckland Rugby League with Joey Green from Auckland Rugby League.
Checking out new blood.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Sports Weekender here on Planet FM. And, of course, this segment is brought to you by Douglas Drainage. Every problem has a solution. All solutions have costs. Minimise the costs with information and technology, providing information with technology and research, which is cost-effective. That's what they do at Douglas Drainage. So, give them a call on 0274 838 737. So good on, a big thanks to Ben Douglas there. Anyway, we move on to our rugby league wrap, and here to join us, the young man back from the islands. I hope you had a good break over there, Joey Green. How are you? Or were you doing some refereeing courses over in the islands?
Yeah, morning, mate. Managed to get away to Tonga last weekend and do some referee workshops as well as referee at the inaugural Heilala Nines as part of their Miss Heilala Festival in Tonga. It's basically the biggest week in the Tongan culture, so it was good to get over there and, you know, give back to the Tongan people as well as get involved in a bit of local rugby league over there. So great change-up, and good to get a mid-winter tan as well, because obviously, like I came back to, the weather here hasn't been the greatest recently.
Anyway, we move on. Of course, this Sunday, Go Media Stadium, 4 p.m. The Warriors versus the Tigers. Tanner Boyden, as we know, for Luke Metcalf, who's had a season injury, ACL injury. Chaz Nikolkopset's out, but Tane Tapeke gets a crack at fullback. Tanner Boyd, his form in New South Wales Cup has been outstanding. He also gives us an option as a kicker. The Warriors have made the right decision there.
100% they've made the right decision. And as well as, you know, as well as Tamari Martin has been playing in that 14 role, and some pundits might have thought he might have got the first jump at the seven jersey once Metcalf went down. When you just look at the form that Tanner Boyd has been in reserve grade, it's just been too good to deny. And, as much as he's been waiting for an opportunity with where the Warriors sat on the ladder at the moment, you know, sometimes you just got to bide your time. And you know, for Boyd, that's been his case. So it's going to be exciting to see him get an opportunity in the seven jersey. Tane Tuipuki gets another opportunity this weekend in fullback as well. And it's going to be a tough matchup against the Tigers side, who upset the Roosters last week and have started to show some improvements from last season as well. But you never really know what you're going to get with this Tigers side.
Yeah, no, I think this one's a tough one, but I'm still backing the Warriors in this one. Just feel that, you know, I think Tanner Boyd will probably, you know, I think he's going to be crucial. I think and his kicking will be crucial as well too, his kicking game.
Yeah, definitely going to be, I guess just how he is as a bit more of a natural seven. He likes to take control of the game, and he's got a great long kicking game as well, and that was the reason why we brought him to the club in the first place. It was because they needed a halfback who had the ability to kick long when they need to, and that's exactly what Tanner Boyd possesses as well. I think another key battle is going to be in that front row as well. You've got James Fisher-Harris taking and Jackson Ford as well, and then you've got the young bucks off the bench and Dimitri Faimaunga and Tanner Stowers-Smith. If Kurt Capel doesn't back up, if he doesn't back up, then I'm assuming Stowers-Smith will stay on the side. Going up against Terrell May and Fanua Pulley as well, it's going to be a bumper matchup, and then you add in Sione Fainu off the bench as well as Jack Bird. It's going to be a massive matchup in the middle, and one that I think the Warriors can win as well. I still think the Warriors will win close, but I don't think it's going to be a pretty game for them tomorrow.
Absolutely. Anyway, last night's match, Sharks 24, Dolphins 12. Nico Hines was fantastic. You know, you couldn't take away from his performance. He was just in everything.
Yeah, and that was the key battle last night, was the battle of the halfback, Nico Hines and Isaiah Katoa. Katoa's probably been the form halfback of the last 6 weeks, and Hines, we know what he can do on any given day. He's been a Dally M player of the year before, but he's been under a lot of pressure recently and not performing. But he definitely performed last night alongside Blake Brayley, who never really has been known as a bit of a running hooker, but shown some class last night alongside his halves partner. So credit to them for grinding out a win last night. Wasn't pretty, but they managed to get the 2 points and find themselves back in the eight.
Absolutely. So we move on to the weekend's game, Saturday games. Knights versus Storms, Dragons versus Roosters, Cowboys versus Bulldogs.
Yeah, look, there's some really good matchups on Saturday, and we start, you know, with Newcastle taking on Melbourne. It should be quite an easy storm win, to be fair. Like, Mitch Meaney, our fullback last weekend, was immense. But, you know, the Knights have started to show some improvement in their side. Once Jackson Hastings has come back into the side, you know, you got to wonder why Adam O'Brien didn't think of playing him there all year. But credit to Hastings for working his way back into the side, but I just can't see the Knights getting the 2 points here. Melbourne should be too strong.
Absolutely. And then, of course, Dragons, Roosters. The Roosters, you know, they lost against the Tigers. I didn't expect that. But to be honest with you, I think this one's a close one to call.
Yeah, especially when, you know, you look at the Dragons side, and they're one of the hardest teams to predict in the NRL. You know, one week they're, you know, beating, you know, the teams that they need to and the Titans, and then, you know, some weeks, like last week, they're going close to upsetting the table toppers and the Canberra Raiders. You never really know what you're going to get with the Dragons, especially at home as well. I think one crucial thing that's going to be good for the Roosters compared to last week is the return of Sam Walker. He should have been back in first grade, you know, a few weeks ago, but picked up an injury in reserve grade, and now we get to see him back partnering with Hugo Savala. So that's going to be an interesting combination, but I think the Roosters should be too strong at home, but I think it's going to be similar to the Warriors game. I think it's going to be a close one.
And then we move on to the other game, the Cowboys versus the Dogs. This one, you know, I think you'd have to go for the Dogs on this one.
Yeah, I'm thinking the same as well. We should be picking the Bulldogs, but yeah, the club's under a lot of pressure at the moment now since Galvin's moved over to the club. Reed Marnie and Toby Sexton moving on from the club after the season as well, and just lots of pressure from outside looking in as well. And the Cowboys showed some promise against Melbourne last weekend as well. They welcomed back Murray Talangi. Most of the Origin boys should be backing up, so there could be hints of an upset, but I'd like to think the Bulldogs should be strong enough as well.
Absolutely, and then we move on to the Sunday games. We've mentioned the Warriors versus Tigers. Eels versus the Panthers. The Panthers, they're at, you know, when you come towards the tough part of the season, the Panthers are there, and believe me, I think they will be just too good for the Eels.
Yeah, as long as the Origin boys manage to back up tomorrow, which it sounds like they are, I think they're just going to be too strong in the Battle of the West. Credit to Parramatta. It's going to be interesting to see how Talon De Silva goes in his Parramatta debut, but, you know, I'm just thinking that, you know, with Penrith, they're going to start peaking at the right time of the year, and this is exactly where they want to be, under no pressure whatsoever, and coming into the last 8-9 rounds of the competition, basically going to be hitting their strides by the time we get to September. So Penrith in a big win tomorrow afternoon.
And of course, then we have the Battle of Queensland, the original battle. It's the Broncos versus the Titans, and on the Gold Coast, obviously big news at the end of the season, Kieran Foran is retiring, and great servant of the game, not only for a lot of the clubs he's played for, but also for New Zealand Rugby League.
Yeah, one of the great halves to come out of New Zealand is Kieran Foran, so it's going to be sad to see him hang up the boots at the end of the season. As well as, you know, Des Hasler being, you know, some would say retiring, some might say being moved on from the club, but I think with that kind of purpose behind them for the rest of the season, that, you know, there might be cause for an upset tomorrow over the Broncos, but you'd think that with the Broncos and how good their side can be, Ben Hunt comes back into the side at hooker this week as well. I think the Broncos are just going to be too strong and spoil the party for the Titans.
Absolutely, absolutely. As I spill water all over myself, so not bad. Anyway, we move on to the Fox Premiership, and then we have a look at, and these are the games, and it's Mount Albert versus Ponsonby, Manukau versus Marist Saints, Bay Roskill versus Richmond, Poinshire versus Te Aritu, and the big one, and this is the big one, Otahuhu versus Papakura. So we start off with the Mount Albert Ponsonby game.
Yeah, look, in terms of getting towards the back end of the season, Ponsonby, you know, have very much nearly, you know, secured their spot in the second division for next year. So I think for Ponsonby, they're just going to be wanting to, you know, finish the season on a high compared to Mount Albert, who coming in towards the back end of the season, they're going to want to start finding some form leading in towards the playoffs end of the season. They had a good win against Marist last week, and no doubt they'll probably back that up again this week against Ponsonby.
And then obviously we've got Manukau versus Marist. Manukau have really been a bit of a dark horse in this, Fox, so far, Joey.
Yeah, they've been definitely been one of the dark horses. And looking at the ladder, you know, if they win this weekend, and you know, and Point Chief see a bit of an upset loss, you know, that might secure their spot in the top four. And it's great to see the Manukau boys doing so well. Their side's been building for a number of years. And it's great to see that finally click, you know, under a great coaching system as well as great depth around the club as well. So big hopes out at Manukau this afternoon, and I'm sure they'll get the 2 points this afternoon again over Marist.
Bay Roskill versus Richmond. I think the boys from Richmond Road and Grey Lynn will take this one.
Yeah, hopefully the Richmond boys start to find some vein of form as well. You know, they've obviously had a few key injuries over the season as well, but no doubt as we start to work our way in towards the last 3 or 4 weeks of the competition, you know, there's going to need to be some teams who need to start standing up. Richmond's one of them if they want to play in the top four, but it doesn't really get too tough against the Bay Roskill side. You never really know who's going to turn up, so I'm thinking Richmond will get the 2 points this afternoon, but like a few of the NRL games, it's not going to be easy.
Absolutely. Point Chef versus Te Arata, you'd have to give it to Point Chef.
Yeah, 100%. They're starting to find some form as well, but you know, it might just be a little bit too late in their hopes for the top four, but Point Chef should be too strong.
Okay, Otahuhu versus Papakura. I was speaking to rugby league people last night who know a lot about the Auckland competition, and they are saying that this Otahuhu side is just too good.
Yeah, they just seem to be on another level this year, and it's a credit to the club for, you know, building the culture that they've got. Papakura will take a good challenge to them. They've probably got one of the better forward packs in the comp who can challenge this Otahuhu side, so it's definitely where the battle's going to be, you know, I guess one for either side. But I think, like most games, Otahuhu might just be that extra bit too strong, and I don't think they'll win as convincingly as they have over other sides, but I think they'll still get the 2 points.
Absolutely. So we have two more rounds to go in Auckland Rugby League as we move towards playoffs.
Yeah, two more weeks of our competition
Fox,
left.
Yeah.
So it's going to be...
Yep. Anyway, before you go any further, we better move on to the Shaman. That's the apologies there, and I'll go through them quickly. Kenora versus Mangarewa, Hibiscus Coast versus Northcote in the Northern Derby, Otara versus Mangere East, and Howick versus Pakuranga in the Eastern Derby. Well, I'm going to go for Howick over Pakuranga in this one, Joey.
Yeah, I'd assume
when,
you know, most people would go for Howick as well. Pakuranga, a bit up and down at the moment, but Howick coming into a good vein of form as we get into the back end of the season.
And Otara versus Mangere East. I think Otara too good here, Joey.
Yeah, they should be too strong. They had a bit of an upset loss of against Manurewa last week, the Otara boys. So they want to bounce back from that one, and I think they will bounce back quite heavily against Mangere East.
Okay, and then we've got Hibiscus Coast versus Northcote. I'm going to go for Hibiscus Coast in this one, Joey.
Yeah, I think this might be the game of the round for Sharman, to be fair. It's going to be close, and I think Hibiscus Coast might just be strong, but I don't think it's going to be any more than 10 points.
Absolutely, and of course, Glenora versus Mangarewa. Well, I'm going to give it to Mangarewa.
Yeah, they seem to be building just at the right time of the season, similar to a Penrith Panthers side. Whilst I don't think they're as good as the Penrith boys, I still think Manurewa will get the job done this afternoon.
And, of course, I did get some notification through the Auckland Rugby League Facebook page, which I'm pretty much follow all the time. I believe you've got the end-of-season awards coming up.
Yeah, we've got our Black Tie Gala coming up in the next weeks at Ellerslie Event Centre to celebrate the end of our season. So Definitely looking forward to that, but we've got a lot of football to get through.
Yeah, so am I, actually. I'm just giving you a hint, Dwayne Mann, Virgo Rasmussen, giving you a hint, the guy that puts out your product every Saturday morning.
It's going to be a good one, and I'll make sure we look after you.
Yeah, you'll send me a program or something. Hey, is there, just on that, is there going to be any inductees to the Hall of Fame this year?
Can't give away too much at the moment, mate. There's a few things that we've got to keep under wraps.
Oh, absolutely, them, absolutely.
But keep your eyes peeled. There's definitely bound to be... there's bound to be something, whether there's a few inductees. Keep your eyes peeled.
Yeah, well, that'd be great. It'd be great to have... Well, I'd love to see someone like Alan McLaughlin, who'd done a lot of commentary around Auckland Rugby League in the times before the Warriors get an inductee. So maybe let my two good friends, Dwayne and Vigo... You know, looking forward to seeing you both in a few weeks' time. to pass that on, that's my views. But anyway, Joey, you have a wonderful weekend. We will catch up again next week, and hopefully we will be talking about the Warriors still in the top four.
Yeah, hopefully, hoping for a good afternoon tomorrow. So thanks for having me on again, and we'll chat again next week.
No worries. Cheers. Thanks a lot. Joey Green from Auckland Rugby League, as we look at the local rugby league scene, and of course it's always good to talk about that, because, you know, and I don't think it gets its fair... gets its fair whack at times. So yeah, anyway, I play a bit of music, and hopefully we can have a chat to Garth Galloway about Rob Walters' first Black Caps selection and the England India series.
Street, concentrating on trucking right. I heard a dark voice beside of me, and I looked round in a state of fright. I saw four faces, one man, a brother from the gutter. They looked me up and down a bit and turned to each other.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender here on Planet FM, and this is a special message from our sponsors. Weekend mission sorted, mate. Wash the car, rinse the boats, clean the bait station, keep the wife's tomato plants happy. All with a water smart tank. No water restrictions, no worries. And different sizes to suit your property. Check out watersmart.co.nz and take control today. Well, we've had a Black Cap size name for our test team and to play Zimbabwe. I think we'd probably have better competition from probably one of our Otago or Canterbury's Plunkett Shield side, and we've also had a very exciting England versus India series. Here to join us and on his new electric bike, motorbike, Mr. Garth Galloway. How are you?
Hello, mate. I'm down at the Harley Davidson shop. We won these two New Zealand FTN motorbikes in a raffle, $25,000 worth. So we popped into Harley just to say, look, there are alternatives here for you. The boys aren't very impressed, I don't think, but we're surrounded by Harley Davidson riders. It's great fun. They've come out for a look, and I think they think we're the country cousins, but that's all right, mate.
You know, they're basically, they'll probably be, you'll be called all sorts of names and accused of all sorts of political alliances as well, too.
Anyway, not the first time.
Yeah, well, you don't care, do you? So, yeah. Hey, looking at this Black Cap squad, and I've looked at it, Rob Walters' first side, and I have a look at it. Like, obviously, Zach Folkes has been added to the 2020, along with Bevan Jacobs with the injury to Devin Conway. But then we look at the test team. He's brought in Matt Fisher. That really was a bit of a bolter.
Yeah, well, I'm pleased to see that. I want to see under a new regime. You've got to acknowledge Gary Stead's what he did for New Zealand cricket and his achievements, and I think he will go down as one of the very best. There's no question about that. But at times, I think he was a little too conservative. That was just my feeling around it. And so I'm pleased to see that that Rob Walter has chosen Fisher. I think it's interesting. You know, he's played 14 tests. Has a reasonable record, 50-odd wickets at 24. And obviously they're looking at him for his pace. Sears is not there. Obviously Jameson's not as well. So they want, they want some pace, and it's an opportunity to blood someone. I suppose the disappointing side of it for me is, this is an incredibly poor Zimbabwean side.
Oh, yeah.
Eamon, really poor. Getting hammered by South Africa, just murdered by them, smashed by England. And, again, this is an opportunity to blood people over there and to just take the fear of losing out and develop some players. So, for me, Conway, I don't think I would have taken him on this test series. And of course, this ongoing selection of Henry Nicholls is, again, disappointing when I think, and it's nothing against Nicholls in a sense, it's just that there was an opportunity to get someone like Mario, Matt Boyle, Curtis Heafy, some of these people in the environment.
This was an opportunity to blood them. It's not being disrespectful to Zimbabwean cricket, but it isn't the Zimbabwe side of the 90s or the early 2000s where you had the Heath Streets and the Campbells and all those good players. You don't have them there. That they are a very, very poor test side. And to be quite honest with you, any of our six major associations would be able to beat them in a four-day match.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I think the name you didn't mention, of course, was the great Andy Flower, who averaged 50 in Test cricket during that period for Zimbabwe. I mean, they were a fabulous side, and Grant Flower, of course, as well, sprang the leggy. They were a really useful side. There's nothing to get excited about, unfortunately, in watching them. It's a duty, sense of duty, I think, that you go over there and play. It would be very good for cricket if Zimbabwe can improve and come up to where they were in the 1990s. That'd be a great thing for cricket. We need it. And otherwise, these tours are just become box-ticking exercises. And, of course, what you'll see, unfortunately, and this is the complaint that I have about the ongoing selection of Nicholls. If you play these guys like Conway and so on for long enough, of course they'll score runs, and they'll score them against weak sides like this, and then they get put back in the mix. Now, he had a good tour to India where he scored runs in the first two tests. He had a 90 and a 70. But then against England, fell away with four innings and scoring something like 26 runs, I think. So, and I just felt he's just been so out of form. If you look at Nicholls, between his test 100 that he scored against South Africa, got 100 in, I'm just trying to think where it was, Wellington or Christchurch, but he got 100 in February 2022, and then he played in 15 innings after that and averaged 16 with a higher score of 39. And then, of course, they keep picking him, gets 200 against Sri Lanka, on a flat one in Christchurch. And there you go.
Yeah, that's it. To be honest with you...
Wellington it was. Yeah, Wellington.
To be honest with you, I know and we probably had similar feelings when we text last night. I don't, as you and I both admitted, while we're proud to New Zealand cricket fans and we love watching the Black Caps, Zimbabwe in this tri-series really doesn't excite me.
No, and nor me and nor anyone really. So get over there, get the job done. I mean, the thing, you know, it's an opportunity for Tom Latham with his side to, you know, to set some standards, to start to think about the West Indies series at home this year. And again, you know, gosh, we've got the West Indies here for about 2 months, incredibly long tour from them, three tests, lots of one-day internationals and T20s and so on. But I guess it's an opportunity for Tom to do that and to get his side in order. I just would have liked to have seen, I applaud the selection of Fisher, I would have liked to have seen a bit more adventurous stuff around the batting.
Absolutely. Hey, I tell you what has excited me, and it's been a fantastic test series, has been this England-India test series. I think this is the greatest advert for test cricket.
Yeah, I mean, India will be, England will be very pleased that they've managed to fight their way back. And at Lord's, you know, I thought after they lost the second test at Edgbaston, they played so well at Headingley to win that first one. Again, I think that, that Stokes made a massive mistake with the toss at Edgbaston. He really did hand India the game. And I thought that it was really strange also that England are producing pitches that suit India. And you can hear McCullum saying, can we please have the ball? You know, can we please have pitches where we're going to get some sideways movement? And obviously they haven't got that in Lords. It appears to be quite slow again. Wonderful to see Root picking up another 100 for England. I thought at the start of this match that England might have been out of the series, really. Their bowlers have been flogged. Bashir, they continue to pick, and I just can't see, you know, I'm just struggling to see the thinking behind that. But if they can fight their way back into this test and pick up a win at Lord's, then they'll obviously be in a much better position. But, I mean, I suppose the highlight of the series so far has been Shubman Gill's batting. Absolutely unbelievable, 430 runs in that second test.
And when you look at him, he's just been probably the prolific batter of the 2025 year, the cricketing year.
Yeah, incredible player. Looks like he's got the mana. Like he's going to be a fine leader of India. He's just sort of, you know, he just has, just looks like he's got everything going for him. Actually, in a way, you know, a little bit like, a bit like Pat Cummins, you know, a great athlete, sort of good looking, fine at everything they do, and good leaders. And Gill just looks, he just has a look, an imperious look of royalty about him, doesn't he? A really exciting, beautiful player. One of the things I think that's interesting about this test, though, Eamon, that I was just reflecting on is how slow the run scoring's been. It just feels like we're back to old-fashioned test cricket.
Well, you mean basically one innings takes 3.5 days to complete?
England scored at 3 runs and over, which is the slowest that they've scored under McCullum.
Yeah, that's just unusual, because one thing Brendan McCullum has brought into cricket, he's brought that sort of like, he's made test cricket, the style it's played, so attractive to watch. Have you been keeping an eye on the Aussie West Indies series, Garf?
Yeah, I have, and I've been enjoying it. You know, the West Indies have dared to dream at times. They've pushed hard with their bowling. They've been impressive. The pitches have offered quite a lot to the quicks. And you've seen Australia at times struggling with the bat a little bit, with some really interesting West Indian quick bowlers, with Shamet Joseph and so on leading the charge. But they have got some young players who look like they can be useful. They've just struggled with the batting, and that Australian side again. You know, we go back to Stark, Hazelwood, Cummins, Lyon. They are a very formidable bowling attack, and unfortunately for the West Indies, they've been found wanting, and they've been quite well beaten, having been in positions where they've been competitive at times.
Absolutely. Well, how's the rest of the day looking for Mr. Galloway on his electric motorcycle?
Off on the electric motorcycle now, buzzing around out for brunch with Lisa, who's got a day off work, which is nice. And then out for dinner to a Japanese restaurant, probably watch the rugby a bit later on, and golf tomorrow, mate. It's all good.
Whereabouts you playing golf tomorrow at?
Waimari Beach, my friend. Waimari Beach. Beautiful course.
Yeah, it is a beautiful course, Garth. Garth, you have a fantastic weekend, and it's always great that you make yourself available to talk about a
cricket. Always happy to, buddy.
And I've got to send you a text during the week because someone from the station's going to be calling you up about something.
That's all good, mate. That sounds lovely. You just send me that text. I won't sleep until I get it.
Well, you better not. It's the most important text of your life. Anyway, Mr. Galloway, bye, you bye. Take care. Bye. Garth Galloway, he's brilliant, isn't he? Absolutely brilliant. Next up, Seamus Martin, as we talk a bit of football.
Hey, brother, there's an endless road to rediscover. Know the water's sweet, but blood is thicker. Oh, if the sky comes falling down for you, there's nothing in this world I wouldn't do. Hey, brother, do you still believe in one another? Do you still believe in love, I wonder? Oh, if the sky comes falling down for you, there's nothing in this world I wouldn't do. Oh, what if I'm far from home? Oh, brother, I will hear you call. What if I lose it all? There's nothing in this world I wouldn't do.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. Looking to sell, looking to buy, looking to get on that Auckland property market. Well, the person you need to speak to is Robert Thompson from Barford and Thompson's in Epsom Branch. Robert has experience in running businesses and is one of the most experienced real estate agents around, going around in Auckland, consistently on the top 10 performance in the central area in Auckland. Robert will give you not only attentions to detail, he will make himself accessible to you on what you're looking for. So, give Robert a call. His number is 021-737-949, or you can give him a call, r.thompson@barfords.co.nz. We talk a bit of football. Here to join us, the great man himself from Between Two Bears podcast and a man that's got a lot of football experience, Mr. Seamus Martin. Good morning to you, young man.
Good morning. I actually caught Robert's car at the lights over in Sandringham, I think I was, earlier this week. I was tooting him, trying to get him to give me away, but he seemed to be, maybe he was in the middle of heading to a big deal. But
that's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. He will be... You're kidding me.
At the lights on Sandringham, I'm trying to think, at the lights of Sandringham Road and Mount Eden Road. There you go. He was turning left down Mount Eden Road, but I think he must have been on the way to a deal, but there you go.
Oh, absolutely. Now, if it was on a Sunday, I'd know where he was heading to because of the place I always catch up with him. Anyway, hey, Club World Cup final coming up, Seamus. PSG versus Chelsea. Well, PSG going as big favourites, and, you know, they've just... It's just will cap off, if they were to win this, it'll cap off a golden year for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the romantic side of me would have liked to have seen a Fluminense in the final against PSG, just to give it that real global feel. You know, Chelsea have had a fantastic season themselves. They've bounced back from where they have been, you know, sort of dipping in where we might have got used to them in the last few years. So great to see them back on that stage, and obviously doing wonderful things in this tournament and tournament football. But you're right, PSG do start as favourites, and it could be the start of a remarkable treble where they've locked away the UEFA Champions League trophy already. They could, you know, put the Club World Cup trophy in there. Then they've got the European Super Cup as well, where they'll take on Tottenham, I think, from memory, who are the Europa League winners to start the season off in Europe there as well. So maybe a three-peat for PSG. But didn't they dismantle Real Madrid in the semi-finals?
I never thought I'd see that. You know, you're probably thinking this is a match to watch, but PSG has just been so dominating in this tournament. And
well, they have, and the way they play too is just so dynamic, isn't it?
It is. It's just brilliant. It's that quick breakout play which I love, and I just think they are probably, you know, if they were to win it, they would deserve it to be the inaugural Club World Cup winners because this would just be huge. But for Chelsea, and as you know, Seamus, from our time, many Londoners we know from Chelsea, about 99% of them have been on the books of Chelsea, as you're aware, when we talk
That's
football.
Right.
So, but I think you know, Chelsea could be, I think they should be watched during the CPL season.
Oh, look, I think it's going to bode to be, or it's got the shapings of, you know, last season was super exciting, wasn't it? But it's got the potential to be another level above this year coming up as well. I mean, the transfer market has been interesting. We'll leave it at that. You know, you've got the off-field, unfortunate circumstance with Diego Jota from a Liverpool perspective.
Absolutely.
So they'll start on the back foot there as well. And, you know, a few of these teams, well, Chelsea in particular, you know, doing so well at the Club World Cup versus a Manchester City who sort of bombed out and didn't perform maybe to their own high expectations. So exciting times, in the lead into a kickoff for a Premier League, which doesn't feel like it finished that long ago, and we were lamenting football not being around, but it's not going to be too long until it's back right front and centre again.
I can tell you something about the show, Seamus, as we come up to the fifth. The most consistent thing that is an all-round gift for me on when I do the show is football. It never stops.
Yeah, well, that's the ball continues rolling, doesn't it?
Oh,
so we're very in a very
does.
Privileged position as lovers of the game.
Yep, and absolutely. So, and, you know, I think you can't get enough of it sometimes. Hey, some of the rankings coming out, the All Whites, they're up to 82 in the world, which is it's one of their biggest rankings yet, but a slight decline for our football fans.
Yeah, I actually had a coffee with Michael Mayne, the new Football Ferns coach, yesterday, who's excited about the move going forward. He wasn't too concerned about the ranking situation. There's a whole algorithm which goes in behind the scenes as to where you are. He's more excited about the opportunities that lie ahead of them in terms of the matches that will be played. And also, you know, a fair amount of movement, particularly down in the Wellington Phoenix and the A-League
Women. Oh, yeah, aren't they?
Around comings and goings of players there. And you know, he suggested that if you're a fan of the women's game and you're a fan of the Wellington Phoenix A-League women's side, that it should be an exciting season the way that he's been speaking to their staff behind the scenes there. So,
well,
a mass exodus, isn't it, of players? I think 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 on my list that have gone. A lot of movement and an interesting time for the Football Ferns to come ahead. But if, you know, thinking about the All Whites, fantastic to see them inside that top 100, and hopefully they can continue climbing up the rankings.
Absolutely. And just talking about the Phoenix Women, obviously they're going to name their coach. Don't be surprised. Don't be surprised. We're not allowed to announce it. We could be told off by the Broadcasting Standards Authority, but it's likely to be Bev Priestman by the sounds of it, which is huge. I don't care what anyone says. To, you know, get away from the Olympics, that is a top coach we will be getting done.
Oh, absolutely. And I think one of the worst kept secrets in the world behind the All Whites taking on the Socceroos coming up as well. That was the other one that everybody in the football world seemed to know about but wasn't able to talk about publicly until it was announced. And I think you're right. With the Wellington Phoenix A-League women's side, it'll come as no surprise when that coach is eventually named who that is. But the moves that they are making as an organisation behind the scenes, they're moving fast, they're moving early, and they're putting the pieces in place. And I must admit, I'm pretty excited to see how that team lines up. But they're still a fair way off from starting their pre-season yet as well.
Absolutely. So we go to the Northern League, Tauranga City versus Auckland FC. We have Auckland City FC, West Coast Rangers versus Western Springs, and Mangarewa versus Birkenhead. So the first game, Tauranga City, Auckland City FC. I think this one is a tough one, and I'm sitting on the fence here.
It does bode as an interesting proposition for Auckland City FC, isn't it? Their last match against Boca Juniors at the Club World Cup. They've had a couple of weeks off, and now they head down to the Bay of Plenty to take on Tauranga City, who are sitting in sixth place, just a point behind Auckland City. I think there might be a little Club World Cup hangover for Auckland City. I think they might find it tough getting back into the grind of week in, week out Northern League football. So I'm actually going to tip a Tauranga City win here. I think the Bay of Plenty side are in good form. They've proven already this season that they're a very tough nut to crack. And at home, maybe with some inclement weather conditions, I'm not sure what it's like up there in Auckland, but it's holding off okay here in the Waikato, but the Bay of Plenty might be a little bit wild. But I'm going to tip a Tauranga City win in that Auckland City game.
West Coast Rangers versus Western Springs. I'd have to go for the Springs on this one.
Well, they're up in second place, which caught my attention in my preparation for our conversation today. 29 points.
You mean you actually do preparation?
I try my best to sound as much as what I'm talking about makes sense. I think you're right. I think the Spring side should be too strong for West Coast Rangers, who are just hovering above the relegation zone in ninth. I'd pick a win to Western Springs there.
And of course, Mangarewa versus Birkenhead. I think Birkenhead just too good, just keeping on the good form that they're in.
Well, it's top versus bottom on paper. Birkenhead sitting in first place on 30 points, just a point ahead of Western Springs. Mangarewa deep in relegation trouble as they were last year. I think it's going to be one season too long for Mangarewa. I can't see them tipping up Birkenhead, who are in good form at the moment.
Then we move on. East Coast Bays versus Bay Olympic.
Well, I know you've been a big East Coast Bays fan, Eamon, for the whole of the season. They don't seem to go away. They're sitting in fifth place.
And Yates, he would be very happy, a good East Coast Bays man, Alan Yates.
Well, he would be. They're a point outside of the top four, and reminder to listeners that the top four placed teams in the Northern League advance to the National League. So, look, I think for me, Bay Olympic have missed their opportunity. They're down in eighth place, and there's a little mini break between them and Auckland United in seventh. So I'm going to tip East Coast Bays to win that one and continue to put pressure on the top four.
Eastern Suburbs versus Auckland FC Reserves. I'm going to go for an Eastern Suburbs win.
Yeah, I'll back you on that one as well. Suburbs are in third place. This is going to be a real youth-filled game. Eastern Suburbs, I should say, you know, plenty of youngsters in their lineup, and a lot of their youngsters have actually shifted across to Auckland FC Reserves as well. So that one has got an under-23 feel to it, but I think Eastern Suburbs should be too strong against Auckland FC Reserves in that one. And the final game is Auckland United versus Fencibles United, isn't it?
Yeah.
With seventh place, 10th. Auckland United absolutely dismantled my Melville United in the Chatham Cup last week. A 7-1 win for them, and I think they'll continue that form against the Fencibles United side that are in a bit of relegation trouble. Although they have got a good run in the Cup, Fencibles. They've moved to the quarterfinals for the first time in a long time, but I think Auckland United will be too strong, who are also quarterfinalists in that Chatham Cup as well.
Yeah, I'm going to sit on the fence, not because I'm undecided, because I've seen the TAB, I've seen the Betjes odds, and it's 460 for a draw.
Oh, that's not bad. That's not bad money if you can get on it. So there, maybe that's the tip to go. Maybe bet with the odds rather than with the head.
Yeah. There'll be a lot of draws in my betting. So yes, sitting on the fence for years. Anyway, we move on to Northern League Women's, and we have four games this weekend. Auckland United versus Fencivals. I think Auckland United just continue doing what they do and sewing up another Northern League.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree. They've got the edge over West Coast Rangers, who for a long time in the season really were going stride for stride with Auckland United. But I think you're right. I think they are the benchmark, and maybe expecting to pick up a player like a Zoe McMeekin, who has been released by the Phoenix, and have her added into their lineup for the season moving forward. A professional coming into amateur, they've got a 30-day stand down, so you might well see Zoe McMeekin bolstering an already very, very strong Auckland United lineup. But yeah, in terms of the match against Fencibles, I definitely think Auckland United will be able to win that one.
Absolutely. And of course, West Coast Rangers versus Eastern Suburbs, you'd have to go West Coast Rangers on that one, but that's a tough one to call. FC Tauranga Moana versus Western Springs, you'd have to go for Springs. And Ellerslie versus Hibiscus Coast, well, you'd have to go for Ellerslie. You're feeling
I agree with all of those. I think West Coast Rangers Eastern Suburbs is the match of the round. That second place, third, that jumps out as the game to get to if you're able to on a Sunday afternoon. But I think you're right. Rangers should have the form in that one over Suburbs. But I could see that one going either way. Tauranga Moana against Western Springs. Well, Tauranga Moana on a little bit of a mini renaissance. They had a 4-0 win over Hibiscus Coast last weekend by virtue of both those teams being out of the Kate Shepherd Cup. But Western Springs, for me, too strong in that one. And Ellerslie, fifth versus Hibiscus Coast, eighth. Well, Ellerslie, I think, will be too strong for Hibiscus Coast, that I'm already tipping to be relegated down to the NRFL Women's Championship.
Also, just some rumours that have just come out. The All Whites could be playing Ecuador in November. So that is just a rumour going around, but there is more to come. We look at the New Zealand players overseas transfers. Obviously, there's been a lot of movement in the last week or so since we last spoke. Tyler Bindon to Sheffield United, and a lot of the Sheffield United fans are very, very happy. That's a huge move for Tyler.
Yeah, that's right. The Championship is such a great level for him to be playing at week in, week out. If he can, put together some solid performances as he's done every step of the way so far that he's gone, I think it's just another positive step. Don't forget, he's on the books of Nottingham Forest. That's a loan move to Sheffield United, so there's a chance that we could see him linking up with Chris Wood in the Premier League maybe. If he has a very strong first half of the season, who knows, Nottingham Forest might decide to recall him for the second part of that Premier League season, and he could get a run in the Premier League. So an excellent move for Tyler Bindon.
And of course, Saprić, he is going to Serbia, and I'm trying to pronounce the name, but I'm trying not to embarrass myself. I know
I've gone with TSC. That's in my notes.
TSC.
is the acronym in Serbia. I had a brief message exchange with Saprić this morning, actually. So he's got his last pre-season game kicking off tomorrow morning, early New Zealand time, and he seems to have settled in well there to Serbia. So great to see him find a home.
Yeah.
Perhaps not the home that some of us would like to see him at, but I think more importantly is that he's going to be able to play regular football. So let's hope that he can get the amount of get regular games under his belt, shall we say, in a level that is going to suit him.
Eli Just to Motherwell. Now that was a bit of a surprise, but he's linking up with one of his ex coaches in Denmark who tried to get him over to Sweden, but Eli's club wouldn't take the money.
Yeah, I must admit my eyebrows raised a little bit when I saw this move coming. I'd seen the rumours that he was in conversations with Auckland FC, which would see him link up with Danny Hay from Eastern Suburbs Times before he went on his European sojourn. But I think the Scottish Premier League is an interesting landing point for him. We've seen New Zealand players like Callan Elliott and Alex Grieve, James McGarry, all ply their trade in the Scottish Premier League at various stages. It's a hard league. I don't know whether it suits a player like Eli.
Yeah.
He's a technical player. I think he might find himself being kicked up in the air every now and again. But hey, once again, the most important thing for these guys is to be playing regular football at a high level, the highest level they possibly can. And I think it's a step up from where he was in Austria.
Oh, yeah.
If he's linking up with a former coach who knows how he plays, well, I'm sure there'll be plans in place. But good to see him secure a move. That's the most important thing, I think, with these, is those players that were out of contract, that they're finding homes now with a good pre-season before the league kicks off proper.
And then we look on, obviously... Obviously, we look at the rumours. Marco Stamina still hasn't been decided on where he's going, but the rumour has that he might be. There was talk of Swansea in the Championship. Still undecided. And then this one. And I sent it to you yesterday, and we're both... Libby Kadachi going to Wrexham. You know, I'll say this to you. You know, if I was offered money to run a sports show in Tai Happy, you have the choice of Tai Happy or Noosa. Do you know what I'd take?
I think I know what you're going to say here.
Yeah, Noosa. I can't see it. I cannot see Libby Kadachi playing for Wrexham. If he's going to play in the Championship, he's going to be playing for a side that's a contender to win it. He wouldn't want to be playing for a side who I suspect will be at best mid-table.
Yeah, interesting. I watched them play last night against Melbourne Victory on their down under tour, and I know it's a pre-season game, so it's very difficult to read anything into it, but I wasn't super impressed by the level of play. Granted, this is the first competitive match, you know, in the pre-season and the lead up to the Championship. I think if you zoom out, I think you're right. I think it's very difficult for a team to come from League One into the Championship, just as it is for a championship side to land in the Premier League and perform in that first year. I think in the last 2 years we've seen the promoted clubs be relegated straight away. So for a guy like Libby, who was in conversations or mentioned in conversations with teams like Sheffield United, where we see Tyler Bindon landing now, who are always in the promotion conversation, it seems, it would be a curious move. It would be an excellent move in terms of a business, in a business context for Wrexham, because it opens up a new fan base here in New Zealand, and we know how in love people are with the fairy tale story of the consecutive promotions. But I think from a footballing perspective, that might not be necessarily be the best move for Libby Kakache. If I'm really, really honest with you, I think if he could find a way to stay in Serie A, I think that would be the best thing for him, to be playing in a very, very high level. But I know, having spoken to him personally, that he has a desire to try and crack England. So, you know, if the opportunity comes, maybe that is the move. Maybe that is the realistic move. But I guess we'll keep watching to see how that pans out with Libby. But I tend to agree with you. I don't think Wrexham would be the right sort of landing place for him, but it might be his only option.
Absolutely. Well, Mr. Martin, what are you doing today? You're down watching Melville today?
Melville away at North Shore United, so you can give me a weather update about whether that game will go ahead or not. They're at Allen Hill Stadium over there on the North Shore.
Hang on, as you know, the studio here, because you've been in here, so I'm bending my head. It's looking a bit grey out there. Sorry, did you hear that?
I could hear that. Look, I think for me it might be an afternoon watching that oval ball with the Black Ferns later on this afternoon, going into an All Blacks game. But you know, if I could, I mentioned Wrexham just before. Gosh, isn't it interesting? They're playing the Wellington Phoenix a week today, and still, Eamon, still no sign of any new player from Wellington. I see they've released three this week. Stefan Kolakowski, Chico Giraldez, and young goalkeeper Dublin Boone are all out. They've released a new kit, and that's fantastic, but no news of any new players still. I just find it really, really interesting. On the flip side, their mates at Auckland FC have reconfirmed Logan Rogerson for another couple of years. They've announced that Louis Toomey has been released, so there's a few comings and goings in Auckland FC, but
I'm
still
gonna say this
in the
now.
Capital, nothing.
As you know, you're on the same WhatsApp page as me with Auckland FC. I tell you something, they are brilliant at getting stuff out to you quickly. They are very, very good. Ian Bennett does a good job. Ember Bennett does a very good job there.
Yeah. Look, I started to see it in the comments from the Wellington Phoenix fans when the new kit was announced. You know, fantastic that we're going to back to black and white stripes. Can you tell us about some players? So, look, I know it's not an easy environment, and I know there's probably, you know, multiple conversations that are happening, but the fact that they haven't been able to land any, and on the flip side, so much conversation and movement from their women's program about who is coming and who is going. And don't forget, the A-League women kicks off maybe a month after the men's side. So I know they're training. I know they're in full-time training. They're back in pre-season. They're on the grass. So, you know, maybe if we've got any spies down in Wellington, they can tell us who's there or who's not there. But
sorry to interrupt you. You said, yeah, I'm a bit concerned when you said the players were on the grass. There might be drugs tested above them.
Well, you're starting to sound like Sonny Bill Williams there, looking for the drug testers to come and come and have a go at Paul Gallen, aren't you?
But look,
let's hope for the sake of football in the country that that there is going to be some movement and some announcement with players, and we've got something to talk about for the Wellington Phoenix next week.
Absolutely, Seamus. Thank you so much. You have a good weekend, my good buddy.
No, thank you very much. Sorry to take up so much of your time. I just get excited talking about football. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, cheers, mate. Seamus Martin, brilliant. Next up, from Montana in the USA, Jeff Simpson.
I used to rule the world. Seas would rise when I gave the word. Now in the sweep the streets I used to own. I used to roll the dice, feel the fear in my enemy's eyes, listen as the crowd would sing. Now the old king's dead, long live the king. 1 minute I held the key, next the walls were closed on me, and I discovered that my castle stand upon pillars of salt and pillars of sand. To let me in, shattered windows and the sound of drums. People couldn't believe what I'd become. Revolutionaries wait for my head on a silver plate, just a puppet on a lonely string.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend here on Planet FM, and I have to say it, we go towards the, as we head into finals at Wimbledon, our finalists have been found. Here to join us is former ATP Top 100 player and a former Davis Cup captain, renowned coach, and all-round good guy, Jeff Simpson. Good morning, good evening to you from Montana in the United States of America.
Yeah, good afternoon and good morning to you. Thanks, Aaron.
Yeah, good. I hope, because you're usually there this time of year, aren't you? Every year, aren't you, Jeff?
I have been for the last couple of years. I've just, because my son's living over here now, so it's a good chance in the winter to get out of the winter and also to visit him and catch up with his news and stuff. So it's very nice to be in the bit of sunshine.
Absolutely. Well, men's semi-finals last night. Carlos Alcaraz versus Taylor Fritz, and it was 6-4, 5-7, 6-3, 7-6. Really, Alcaraz, you know, he was pushed a bit by Fritz, but, you know, he looks pretty good on this one, does Carlos?
Yeah, he does. I mean, he played a pretty good first set against Fritz. I was lucky enough to watch it this morning, and he played a good solid first set, and then Fritz sort of changed his tactics up a little bit, where he just went for everything, and especially attacking Carlos's first and second serve. He was just going for them big, and he broke him, you know, to win that second set 7-5, which I thought, you know, was a great credit to Fritz. In fact, I thought it was probably one of the, you know, the best sets I've seen him play on grass. And then, you know, he you know, Carlos came back again in the third, and you know, was quite dominant. Just really, you know, exploited some good tactics. Body served him all the time, and you know, pinned Taylor. You know, Taylor wasn't really getting out of the way enough of them, and he's got those extreme grips on the return anyway. So he was having difficulty with his serve, and then he sort of deftly drop volleying and bring him into net a little bit and expose his movement a little bit, and then you know, he won that set, and then we went into quite a good fourth set where Taylor picked it up again, started to play really well again, and of course Carlos went his, you know, about 4-1 up, I think, in the tiebreaker, and he thought, oh, it's finished now. Then Taylor revived himself and came back and was up 6-4, you know, set points. And that's where we see, you know, we've seen it so much. We saw it in the French where you saw Alcaraz just knuckle down and you know, win like 4 points in a row, which was phenomenal. Just played incredible tennis to win that that fourth set and, you know, go through to the final.
And, of course, Jannik Sinner, obviously just too good for Novak Djokovic. Even though a lot of people wanted to see Novak go out, make this final and go out of a champion, Jannik Sinner proves why he is the best player in the world.
Yeah, I mean, even Novak said, I listened to what he said before, he said, this is probably, if I'm going to win another Grand Slam, this is probably the surface and probably the time for me to do it. But, you know, he's sort of the last three time in the Grand Slam he's played, he's sort of faltered at this point. I mean, he injured himself in Melbourne, you know, and lost to Jannik quite comfortably. And then again in the French, he did the same thing in the semis again. And then he took a bad fall against Caboli in the quarterfinal where they slowed it, slow motion, where it looked like he pulled his groin a little bit. But he just moved very gingerly, you know, he was serving and volleying. He was trying his hardest out there, but you know, when you're playing somebody that moves as well as Sinner, that hits a ball that hard, and I couldn't believe how well he Sinner served. I mean, I think he'd won at one time. Look at the stats in the beginning of the third; it was served 40 times and won 36 of the points. You know, that's off the first serve. That's pretty incredible stats. You know, and I'm not making excuses for Djokovic. I think it would have been hard for him to win anyway, but. You know, Sinner sort of just didn't even give him a look in, and he's just doing everything, you know, that much better. And also, the court was playing like a hard court. You know, it's quite dry out there. It was quite fast, and that suited Sinner even better. You know, it wasn't sort of, you know, damp and you know, bad bounces or anything like that. It was just a really good surface court, and you know, with the conditions quite fast, that really suited him down to ground. So he had everything sort of going for him, and he was just that little bit better than him.
Absolutely. And of course then Sinner and Alcaraz will play that final, and Alcaraz won it last year, and of course you have a look at it, them two have been going hammer and tong for the last 2 years. I feel if it's going to be anyone's year on it, I think Jannik Sinner definitely has the edge in this final.
Yeah, a lot of people are sort of going that way. I'm sort of staying the other way. I think that, you know, Carlos is going for his third, title, Wimbledon title. He's won the last two. He's playing, I think, really, really good tennis. I think he's got the edge over Sinner in the fact mentally that he's won those tight matches, I think, and he's the only guy to really beat Sinner, and he seems to be able to, when it really comes down to the crunch, he seems a lot braver. He seems to feel more confident. And this is just what I've seen and, you know, just watching it. And he's got an 8-4, you know, head-to-head against Sinner, so he is up on him. I think he's just got a lot more in my mind. And just looking at both of them play, although they're both playing great tennis, he just has a little bit more variety in his game, and he just backs himself so much in a tight situation. So I think it could go either way, like you said, but, you know, I'm still staying with Alcaraz.
Absolutely. And, of course, the women's final, Swiatek versus Anisa Smirnova, who beat Sabalenka. This one has, I picked before this tournament, Jeff, and I'll, I said, watch Swiatek in this, you know, maybe I might get a job at the ASB tournament, being a picker for the Open. I doubt it somehow. So, Nicholas, feel free to give me a number, give me a call. But I think this is going to be an exciting final.
Yeah, look, I was very, very impressed with Smirnova, to be honest with you, when I watched her play Sabalenka, and, you know, she stood up on the line against Sabalenka. She absorbed all the power that Sabalenka threw at her. Her forehand can be a little bit off, but she's got a beautiful backhand, and she uses her backhand really, really well. She can come under it. She can slide. She was drop-circling Sabalenka. She was wrong-footing Sabalenka. She's going back behind her. And then when it really came time, the pressure seemed again, she seemed to be much calmer, and I thought she played the games really well, especially the returning games. And so I don't know, you know, to see that they haven't played. I don't think they've played ever. So we don't know who, you know, has got the advantage. She's playing, I think we just don't know what she's got, because at 17, I think she was in the semi-final of the French Open, which was, an incredible effort at that age. So she's got a lot of talent. And just looking at her play, Sabalenka, you know, you could see that she is a very, very good tennis player. Now, you look at Swiatek, on the other hand, has got a lot of confidence. She's actually improved her movement on a grass court. Before, I thought she struggled going wide a lot because she didn't know whether she wanted to slide or, you know, run. And I think, you know, just looking at her, she's fixed that up a lot. So she's moving better across the court and wide. Anything down the centre, she's going after very well. She's very confident. Probably saying this, she'd probably have to be favourite going into it. She's won a lot of matches on the grass anyway, coming into this tournament. So it's going to be a good match. And like you said, I think, you know, she has a great chance to win. But I just got a feeling with Smirnova that, you know, we haven't seen her, you know, reach her peak yet. And I think she's just growing in it. She won the tournament before, and she's won, you know, she's won every match for 3 weeks on grass so far. So she's got to be confident. She's beaten the number one player in the world. And beat her when it was tight. And Sabalenka playing well. So, you know, I think I'm
going to
edge towards
Anisa
for that one as well.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll keep with Swiatek as I started from the beginning. Jeff, Jeff, I have to say, I always enjoy having a chat to you. I listen to you all day, you know. It's just so good, and I really hope that you're enjoying your trip away, getting away from this horrible New Zealand winter. Believe me, it has been terrible, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your holiday.
Okay, thanks very much, Eamon, and good luck for Swiatek for you.
Oh, absolutely. And maybe, you know, Nicholas, if you're listening, I could be the guy doing the seedings for the ASB. Okay. Catch you later. Okay,
thanks for the call.
Cheers. Okay. He's wonderful, isn't he? Absolutely wonderful. Well, next up we've got the panel with John McBeth and Lee Piper. So I'm going to play a bit of music and hopefully I have them on the other side.
That's the bottom line. Yeah, I have a lot of fun, don't ya? And living with you is a ball of a time. Hey, beauty, when the mood gets you down, you bottom lips here dragging on the ground. That's when
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. Well, it's the interesting time of the show. It's the educational part of the show. It's the panel. On line one, the mouth of the South. The one, what the fans want, what the fans need, Lee Piper.
G'day, good morning.
And of course, to be or not to be, broadcasting legend, John McBeth. How are you, John?
I'm good, Eamon. Hi, Lee, how you doing?
Hello, John. Good, thank you.
We get into it. Big test down, and of course, a big test in Wellington this weekend. They claim that all the it's going to be a sellout. I don't remain that optimistic, but I have to say that, you know, last week we did see a French team really put it up to us, but I can see a different type of All Blacks team. What has the atmosphere been like in the Wellington region about this test, John?
Oh, it's been pretty good, actually, and quite positive. The weather is a bit changeable at the moment. I'm up the road by an hour from Wellington, but it's not raining here. It's clearing up quite nicely, so hopefully that will be the same in Wellington. But the forecast isn't all that positive, so that tends to dampen people's enthusiasm. But, you know, I know good old South Canterbury people arrived up here yesterday, and they've had a big day in Wellington, so you get that outsider influence, which, you know, Wellington has always been a popular place for people to visit for rugby tests over the years, and this seems to be no different to the usual. So let's hope that weather doesn't play too significant a role. But I understood it was a sellout, Eamon, so when you said you're not optimistic, I just wondered about that. I thought there was a huge crowd going, and they were so keen to see the women play first and the All Blacks later.
Yeah, I have a look at it like, obviously, they're saying it's a sellout, but, you know, the French team, we just don't know what we're going to get out of this French team. And, Lee, you looked at Dunedin last week, and I have to agree with John. One thing about Test Rugby in Wellington, it does have a great atmosphere and and there's only really two places that you can really see it happening, is Wellington and Dunedin. And, of course, Dunedin, it was a big weekend there. What are you picking for this weekend?
Yeah, well, I think, look, obviously it's a lot different playing under the roof than it is playing in Sky Stadium, and the weather potentially will dictate a little bit about how the All Blacks play. We struggled last week with no wind under a roof to catch the ball. We're certainly going to find the ball tricky if it starts swirling around in that wind inside the bowl, for sure. And we've got a newbie on the wing, Will Jordan back at fullback, so we're going to be tested there. I think when you have a look back and have a look at that test again, sure, it was close, and it's a game we could have lost potentially towards the end. We also could have won it by 20 or 30 points. You know, I think there's, we created opportunities. We obviously had three tries disallowed. There's a couple of those are dubious, particularly the infringement. I've seen that. I can go and watch club rugby today and see that 100 times, and nothing would be called. And I think just the play on that is when the referee says, oh, I'm happy with it, you've got to have clear evidence to overturn it, and I don't think that he had clear evidence to overturn it. But be that as it may, I think the All Blacks will try and keep that up-tempo going. You can't count the French out, and I know that there was talk about France B and et cetera, but when you have a look at it, if the All Blacks send our B team or even our C team, we would expect them to be more than competitive with pretty much every international side. So, you know, they've got plenty of depth over there. They've got plenty of experience. A lot of those French players have played together at under-20 level. So they definitely had some combinations. They also had nothing to lose. So I think there was probably more good than bad came out of that test match. But now you're getting into, this will be a real test. I mean, conditions, as I said, we're not expecting. You're not going to have a free-flowing game where you're going to get it out to the outsides. You know, I think it's going to be, there's going to be a lot of pressure come on that All Black type five. They've just got to continue the work that they did last week. Set piece was good. Obviously, they liked what they saw with Christian Leo Willie. The temptation may have been to switch Xavier back to the back. They've not gone with that. They've kept with Billy Proctor in front of his home crowd again, which I'm pretty pleased about. I mean, he got caught a couple of times, but that's, you know, that's no reason to chuck him out. And I think he's a long-term prospect they could get. So, you know, I think it's going to be pretty tight again. The weather, again, could dictate it. We know that rain's a great leveller. So I'd expect a tight test match tonight as well.
Yeah, well, just your feelings on this, John. You know, like, the big thing is, it's the unknown with the French, you know, like they can make 10 changes and you still don't know what you're going to be playing against, you know, this unpredictability.
Oh, I don't think that's the case so much these days, because we see a lot of them. They're playing in a red hot competition back home. So these players, while they might not be recognised or long-term French test players, they're right up there with the best that they have got. And they're playing to patterns that, you know, the French have developed. It's not that sort of, oh gosh, you know, they've got a first five who's going to run it all over the place, or they've got outstanding attacking backs who are going to split us open. That sort of thing is, I think, a few years ago now. We know what we're going to get from the French, and it's going to be physical, it's going to be skillful, it's going to be hugely defensive, and they're going to test us all the time with some unpredictable moves that the All Blacks struggled to match, but shouldn't this week. You said they could make 10 changes. Well, I think they've made 8 from last week. And so Lee picked up on a point where he said the French had nothing to lose, and that's exactly their advantage. They've come out here, they would have been grinning when all those experts were saying, well, it's an understrength team, and isn't that awful, and, you know, we're going to... But what that did was put pressure on Scott Robertson and his team. Gee, you know, losing to an understrength team would have been horrendous, and that's why they haven't made many changes this time. They've got to get this right tonight, otherwise their season is taking a big step back.
Anyway, we talk about the Lions are playing the Anzacs. Lee, I don't know about you, but the Australian New Zealand Rugby Union 15, as they call it, you know, like, I would have thought that this would have been Andy Farrell would have named closer to his test team. He's keeping it close. What's your feelings on this match? Does it have any importance?
Look, I think the Lions, I think they're looking for a decent hit out, and I think they'll probably get one tonight. It's the best of the rest, isn't it? It's the best of what we didn't pick in the All Blacks and what Australia didn't pick combined. It'll still be, look, there's some quality players in there for sure. And so I think they'll test the Lions. What's going to be interesting is when they get to this test. I mean, I watched Australia play Fiji last week, and they were like, they struggled to get past Fiji. They needed a 78th minute kind of try, and Fiji's biggest problem is they can't shut out a game. They never can, and so they get into a good position, and then they can't kind of control it in the last 5 to 10 minutes to keep them at bay. But that would have been a massive upset. I don't think they'd lost since 1943 or some statistic they were throwing up. Anyway, be that as it may, that's just not a great a curtain raiser, if you like, coming in for a series against the Lions. I fear that if the Lions get away on them, they could really get away on them. They've threatened to at times, the Lions, but that would be a bit of a disaster. I know there's been rumblings about the Lions tour to New Zealand and the playing of those Super Rugby sides and whether they're going to be strong enough without their All Blacks in there. They were last time. In fact, the Highlanders rolled the Lions last time. But I think in this particular series, I'm going to be very interested in the first test. I think the Lions gunning with all of their players in, I can't see Australia getting within 20, to be honest. And it'll be interesting tonight to see if this side gets closer.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's so much reliant on, you know, the Joe Smith sort of magic and that, but when you look at what we've seen so far from this Lions team, and we haven't seen their best combination really, I don't think, yet. They've got, you know, it's their size, their skill, their confidence, you know, and they're well led. I think they're going to be far too good for Australia in all the tests.
Yeah, and I'd have to, you know, like, I still think it's still going to be 2-1. I think you read nothing into, even though Australia only just pipped Fiji, you read nothing into it. Big news, James O'Connor's been drafted into the Wallaby squad.
Well, that probably tells you how, James O'Connor's good, but he's at the end, he's not at the beginning. They might as well roll in Quade Cooper. I can't see it being 2-1. I can see this being 13+3-0. I think, sure, they're playing at home, but the Lions have got great, great supporters, so they'll have plenty of people out. What would have been, ironically been good, given the strength of South Africa, would have been the British Isles against South Africa at the moment. That would have been a
mouth-watering
game, particularly the size that South Africa have. But I just haven't seen anything, even in Super Rugby, you know, you kind of got the feeling, like, they're kind of good early on, but the draw kind of favours them because they play each other kind of twice. I just haven't seen enough to go, these guys are going to be competitive, particularly and the tight. The Lions are big, they're athletic, they're able to draw from those big sides of England and Ireland particularly. I think it's 3-0, 13+, that's where I'd be putting my small amount of money.
Yeah, well, what?
When you were standing alongside Fabian Holland, Lee, you know, did you feel quite tall?
No, I felt very short, actually. But, look, he's someone that would go well playing the Lions at the moment. But he's been swung into it, hasn't he? Like, a 22-year-old who was kind of drafted in the glory of the first test, I was chatting to him this week, it's down to business now. There's no story this week. It's, you know, we need him to dominate that line out as he did last week because, as we talked about earlier, in tricky conditions, that set piece is going to be vital. So he needs to front.
But
I've thrown him on that already.
Good.
I will say this, John. Yes, see, he did feel quite short beside Fabian Holland, but his boldness doesn't change at all. And you've known him for a longer than me, John.
I loved. I saw a photo of you, Lee, was it on TV? Even something you and when he was a bit younger and not quite so big, but he's a monster man. And we don't get those sorts of players here, and we need that. And second test is always the hardest, I always think, you know. So I hope he's, as you say, he's up for it, and he appears to be a guy with a lot of common sense and maturity for a young age. So, you know, we're looking for good stuff from him, without doubt, for a few years to come, too.
I must have...
Sorry,
Ed, Lee?
Yeah, I just think, if you can unearth him at 22, you know, you're into it. You could have him for 10 or 15 years at the top, and I don't want to get ahead of where he's at, but... As I said a lot last week, he's singularly focused, but really mature for a guy of his age. Yeah. He's not getting carried away. He's very level-headed. He's got his feet on the ground. If he can keep that and then nurture all of that as good, and then obviously learn from those great players that are around him, he should go from strength to strength. But he doesn't want to get ahead of where he's at. He's just, it's early days. Look, he did everything last week. You wouldn't want him to do any more. Yeah. Win your own line-out balls, win the kickoffs, be effective, make your tackles. I think he was New Zealand's or the All Blacks top tackler, which has been a strength for the Highlanders. That's all you need to do, and keep doing that more often, and that's a tick. So hopefully we'll see that tonight.
I think we're going to have to see good defence by the Black Ferns and the curtain raiser.
Oh, yeah.
People turn up for that curtain raiser because that's I'm just really enjoying watching the women's rugby. I wasn't all that impressed with what I saw in their A and B match last week. I thought, even the Australians, who haven't beaten this New Zealand yet, but it's a Laurie O'Riley trophy, and that's significant. Mm. And a big game because of World Cup selection coming up. So I hope the support's there, and I'd like to see this Black Ferns team really nail it. I'm not convinced yet, so hopefully they show us plenty today.
Just on that, John, and just saying that, the Laurie O'Riley Cup, I really feel that, you know, this is where New Zealand rugby does drop the ball. They need to be telling us more to who was Laurie O'Riley. As you know, I've done stuff on this show about Laurie O'Riley, but, you know, this is a huge trophy and a man that done so much for women's rugby, John.
Absolutely, and he died very young, sadly, and, I knew him when he was, the O'Riley family came from Timaru when I was growing up. They were quite a prominent family. In fact, one of his brothers, Dennis, was very much a figurehead for a lot of the gangs in New Zealand. Spoke his mind, was, you know, but the whole family were such a determined family, and Laurie was one of those who led the way with his support for and promotion and fight for women's rugby. So it would be nice. I don't know if a member of the family is going to be there to present the trophy. I certainly hope so.
I would hope
so,
too.
Sometimes these things go on and on. They get a bit long and say, oh, the Laurie O'Riley trophy. We've got the cup somewhere. It would be, we've got to keep the tradition going. Got to keep it alive.
Absolutely.
Keep the memory there.
Well said.
I just wonder if we've missed a trick here, though, and I know what you're talking about, John, but I think the women's game's developed to the point where I worry that they're playing in a curtain raiser because... I just worry that people won't turn up because it's like, well, I think it's probably at 4 o'clock or whatever time it is. It makes for a big day. And look, the traditional rugby model for a 7 o'clock game is I kind of go out for lunch. I meet the guys around 2 or 3 or whoever group I'm going with. I have a few beers. I'm not going to then go, right, well, I'm going to leave the pub with guys that I've only, to your point, people coming up from South Canterbury, and now I'm going to go to the curtain raiser. It doesn't matter who was playing. And I at times think, you know, I think we should be taking these games to places where you would potentially, you know, pack it. So take it to a Palmerston North or a Whangarei or
Napier.
You know, even Taranaki, Napier, exactly. Just take it to places where it's the only game in town. Don't chuck it in as a curtain raiser. Oh, I think that's just going to, you're going to see a lot of yellow seats, and I don't think that's good for the game, and I don't think it's representative of where they actually are at as a team. I think I'd look at that game you're talking about, John, and I agree, but I think we need to also go, how do we expand this now? I mean, even in our Super Rugby women's comp, it's not enough. You know, you've only got four teams in it. We need to be playing Australia.
Yep.
We need to look at more tours. I know the Lions are coming here in a couple of years, but we need to be exposed to, particularly in Europe, we should be doing an end-of-year European tour, playing France and England and Ireland. Otherwise, we just run the risk of just kind of playing amongst ourselves. You don't get any better. I think it's parallel.
And we're finding that with Super Rugby, you know, just us on Australia, where we're suddenly realising there's a big gulf developing, I think, between Southern Hemisphere rugby and what's happening around the rest of the world, both in men's and women's.
Anyway, we move on. British Open next week. Ryan Fox will be it will be interesting in Ryan Fox's form. I really feel that this could be a breakthrough, a top 10 finish for Foxy, because he knows that Port Rush course so well. I just want to give us some of your thoughts, starting off with you, Lee, on do you think Foxy's a real shout to possibly be in a top 10, maybe even be in a potential to win this tournament?
Well, he started well in the Scottish Open, opening round of 4-under, I see today. He's even parred it to be kind of, I think he's tied for 27. But what I would say is he's just very good. I think he's made every single cut that he's been in regards to the majors. So this should be no different to you say. He likes that kind of course. It's just that mental hurdle with him, and it's putting those four rounds together. So Foxy kind of, even in this, the Scottish Open, he jumps out of the gate, he shoots a 4-under. You know, you've got to back that up with another 2-under to be 6-under and in the mix. You don't then go even par, drop from 9th to 27th. And that'll be the key for him. If he can get off to a good start, you know, he's just got to keep that momentum going and put four solid performances together, because that's what separates the top 10 or top 20 from the rest. They can all have a round, but you've got to have a Scottie Scheffler 4-in-a-row round, or have three remarkable rounds and kind of maybe one even par. But look, he's definitely developed. I think those wins that he's had in recent times to get that first win, the Canadian Open, and then another win followed it. I think that's a bit of a turning point mentally for him, and he just needs to take that on. And I think just believe in himself. You know, he's good enough to be there. He's good enough to mix in the company at the top. And if he can continue that, then yeah, he's a shout.
Well said, Lee. And also, you know, there's that factor that when you look at Ryan Fox playing, you think there's a guy who loves what he's doing and is not affected by the fact that he's, you know, one of the top golfers in the world. He likes to chat to people. He plays quickly. You know, he's a dream player, I think. I just love
he's
watching
a good
him.
Bloke. Yeah, he's just a good bloke.
Absolutely. He is a good bloke, yeah.
And when you look at him, like I've looked at his history on this Port Rush course, he's broken records on there. I think if anything, it just would be so symbolic if we were to have somebody contesting the Open, another New Zealander, say following on from the Bob Charleses and Michael Campbells who was in the hunt a few years ago. This would be symbolic.
Well, he likes the Lynx course because it suits his style. He's a big hitter, like a Bryson DeChambeau type. You do get into trouble in Lynx courses, but it's a completely different play than, say, the Masters, where you've got to craft your way around there. Your club selection's got to be, you know, spot on. It's tricky. Not so much here, you know, and it's going to be often it's windy. So sometimes it favours the big hitters because you can be a little bit more wayward, although you want to avoid the rough. The US Open is clearly case in point. But to my point, I think he it's kind of a New Zealand course, isn't it? It's the sort of course we would get comfortable with. Windy, halfway hosing down, good rain in the middle of summer. That's the sort of course you get in New Zealand. So I think he'd be very comfortable there.
Yeah, mulled wine at the end of it, or at least
a bit of a mulled wine.
He'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly. Bit of a cab serve.
What does this show denigrate into talking about alcohol? And every time, and the common denominator is you, Piper.
I didn't start that. No, I did, didn't I? Yeah. And it's only because it's just started to rain again here on the Kapiti Coast, and I'm thinking, oh, mulled wine might be quite good tonight. Does anyone drink mulled wine anymore, or is it just
Yeah. No, we at the we Catholics, we love it out at the Shark Park. The mulled wine comes out by the fire.
Yeah. Along with the mouldy pies out of the cafeteria.
Exactly. Well, the Jimmy's pie goes in about midday. By the time you get it at four, she's pretty hot and pretty solid.
Hey,
Lee, how many pies do you think they'll sell today? At
oh, Peter, there's a lot of pies.
Yeah, good.
Oh, I have to say, it's a pleasure having both of you on. Pipes, I'll find a time to chat to you during the week. Mr. Macbeth, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Obviously, trying to keep Piper in line is a hard job, so I needed an ally there.
You guys have a great day. Cheers, John.
Yeah, cheers, mate. Thank you. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay, we'll see you later, guys. That's us done.
This program was first broadcast on Planet FM, community access media in Tāmaki Makaurau, Auckland. You're hearing it on accessmedia.nz thanks to Erirangi Te Motu.